What up, everybody? This is Double G for the Fight Game podcast. I apologize again. We are one day later than usual. Of course, it's because the Warriors played the Mavericks in game one of the Western Conference Finals. I also do a podcast for the Warriors, so it's like a live stream after the game. So I was focusing on that. Hadn't even watched Dynamite until, I don't know, it's about 5 hours ago. I finally finished the show. But that's why next week will be fine because there's games Tuesday and Thursday, no games Wednesday, so we'll be right back in our normal time before I head out to Vegas. Like, that thing is coming up so fast. But John, you know, we were kind of talking off air. We just kind of made some changes, some very small changes to what we do here. But one of them was we stopped doing the NXT review, and it was just because there was really no reason. Like, you know, the show wasn't good. They weren't, they weren't doing anything on that show that we needed to sort of like remember or follow up into the next show. It was, you know, the storylines are so bad. They're cutting people left and right and they're leaving major holes. So it was almost like sort of disrespectful to the viewer. And we were just like, we're done. So have you watched since we stopped covering it?
No, I've been catching up on my other shows. Actually, I've made Tuesday a non-wrestling night. I cover stuff for the Take It Home podcast, yeah, and Fight Game Media. We cover Raw 98, so watch a lot of stuff. Plus, I like to watch some old school stuff. And I'm just like, you know what? Tuesdays, it's like a good day to just kind of just watch anything but wrestling. So that's what I've been doing on Tuesday nights.
Yeah, so good. I mean, I don't miss it. It's just kind of funny how we were in this pattern for like 2 years, just doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then we stopped doing it for that 1 week. And I haven't picked it up again. Like, I was just like, all right, goodbye. We're done with you.
Yep. Same here. So yeah, you got to watch the Warriors. I got to watch the Connor season finale. So yeah, Wednesday was interesting, but now we're back. We're back for some Fight Game Media. We're talking about some Dynamite and some things extra. What craziness is going on in wrestling today?
Yeah. So, what do you think? You know, this has been the most covered story on this website all week long. Like, you go to the YouTube page, and the first discussion that Brian and Dave had about Sasha Banks and Naomi walking out of the show before the show started has like 50,000 views on YouTube. Like, people are following this story very closely. Now, Dave has said his piece. Brian said his piece. So they sort of talked about it. I'm going to talk about it here on this show. My take is going to be slightly different than theirs. But you haven't had an opportunity to talk about this. So I'm just kind of wondering from your perspective, what did you think about that when you heard that they just walked out of TV before the show started?
I feel like I need a few more details in the story, but the gist I got was they showed the TV, they went over a match, they were in disagreement with some of it, talked to Vince. Vince was wanted to keep the direction they wanted to go, he wanted to go with it, and they gave the belts and walked out. I guess they don't want to be... They're tag team champions, so they want to be treated and respected as so and booked as so. They don't want to be fodder for Ronda and Bianca Belair, I believe, right? They're going to be split to go face the champions.
Yeah, I think they were going to be the challengers in both women's title matches. I think that was the original plan.
Yeah, I mean, if it's... I can see it's like a one and done thing. I can see them like, you know, how does this really help us, right? Again, though, it is the tag team championship, the women's tag team championship. That, and I don't even know it's even featured on television. I don't watch everything. You watch more than me, but are they like a featured big act on each week, or who are they feuding with?
Yeah, I think that's part of the problem, which is now I've not talked to either side, right? I don't have sources. I'm not talking to Sasha. I'm not talking to WWE. Like, that's not what I do. But you know, I talk to people. And so here's sort of how I understand, or at least if I'm trying to put a few things together, what the problem could be. Okay, so I really think this goes back further than just last week, right? It goes back to all talent, mm-hmm. unless your top talent probably has issues with the way that they're booked, you know, unless they're champs, unless they're constantly pushed, unless they have top programs. Everyone should be like, hey, like, I could do more. Like, what's going on here? And so I think Sasha has a higher opinion of herself as a star than WWE currently does. Not to say that they don't see her as a star, because I think they understand that she is really, really top tier in the women's division and overall in the company. I find, and see, the hard part about this for me is I'm such a fan of hers that I'm trying to not be biased just because I think that she, especially when it comes to the wrestling, that, you know, she's probably one or two in the wrestling part of the women's division. Her, Asuka, I still like Becky, but I think Sasha's better than Becky. Bayley's good too, but I have her a little bit on a higher pedestal or a higher ranking than some may. So I think some of it has to do, she's kind of been marginalized of late. I think what happened is when Rhonda came back, she probably got nudged down a bit. I don't know if all of Rhonda's programs were going to be her programs or not, but I do think that, you know, you add a top level star, mm-hmm. everyone else below her goes down a rung, you know, and I think that definitely happened. And if you go back to the tag team of her and Bayley, and we were hearing things about, you know, they, because they did such a great job during the pandemic, and then, you know, I don't think that great job that they did was actually recognized very well by the company. Then Bayley gets hurt again, and so, you know, there's so many things that are tied to how folks fare in the company. You know, it could be just Vince's opinion. It could be someone gets hurt, stalls plans. It could be something else happens. Someone gets hot and you kind of get bumped up. So I think, you know, this is part of this. What is going on has just been sort of this, like, this pattern of situations that have been happening for Sasha. And so they came to her with this thing with Naomi. They're like, look, we need tag champs. You're going to be on both shows. You know, we need you guys to kind of carry this thing. And that was an interesting program for them. And they were going to really make this women's tag team title belt a thing again. And that was, from what I remember, that was very important to Sasha and Bayley when they had it. It was like, we want to make this thing valuable. We don't just want it to be throwaway. Like, this is like mm-hmm. a big thing. And so, you know, all these things sort of set up and, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And so then, as happens a lot in WWE, plans change. We hear that a lot. People make fun of that. But when there's one guy who makes all of the decisions, like, yeah, if he changes his mind, then there's like a trickle-down effect to everything related to his decisions. And so, you know, she's thinking like, oh, we're doing this tag thing and we're going to make these belts and we're going to have an opportunity to be on both shows, which is great. And then they're like, oh, you know, we'll worry about these belts later. Now you're going to be putting this match together and you're going to be put into these challengers for title matches. And I don't think that it's necessarily the issue is with losing to the women's champions. I think it is that it's sort of like, oh, did we get those tag straps just so we could, you know, prop up ourselves to then get beat? And then what happens after that? Like, are the tag straps still important? And so I think a lot of it is really like mixed plans, you know, maybe feeling that the plans that were supposed to be for them and probably through the summer weren't actually going to happen, and just really, you know, a trust kind of thing. And, you know, I think they stood up for themselves and were just like, you know, we need something here. You know, we need something so that we know that we're just not going to, you know, be beat and then marginalized again and then start from square one. Now, yeah. Again, this is my opinion, my take from putting a few things together. But the thing that was really interesting, and I don't want to misquote Brian and Dave. I heard Dave's take on this on Wrestling Observer Radio. I did not hear Brian's on Wrestling Observer Live. But from everything I heard, the what they had said was that they didn't believe that people had their backs, that people had Naomi and Sasha's backs, and that it was kind of like, you know, nobody's really on their side. And it's so weird because I heard like way differently. I heard that, you know, a lot of people actually have their backs because they sort of feel the same way about their own booking, but they don't want to broadcast it in any way. They don't want to get heat, you know, whatever it is, whatever the reason why, you know, maybe they're staying a little bit more private. And so that's kind of an interesting thing, right? Like all of the people that Brian and Dave talked to think that, you know, what Sasha and Naomi did was, you know, wrong, I guess. But then there's another subsection of people who are like, good on them for sticking up for themselves. I wish I would do that myself, or I wish I did that in the past, or hopefully I get to do that in the future, whatever it is. So that is just, you know, that's a little piece of this. You know, it just shows that, you know, there's a lot of people that have opinions that may not want to be vocal with them. So that is what I've heard. I thought it was, you know, you get such a mixed message there. You know, you Vince and the grab the brass ring thing that he constantly talks about, which is hard because, you know, I'm sure there are tons and tons and tons and tons of guys who were like, oh, like I did all these things to get over, and then you stopped me from getting over, like Zack Ryder, right? Like Zack Ryder's a big one. Like he was doing all of these things, and it was like, well, no, we don't really want you to get over, so we're going to stop all of these things that you're doing to get yourself over. And I'm sure there's other people who feel that way, but I just wanted to state that because it sounds like, at least from the wrestling media that I listen to, that the folks that they talk to, it sounds like they're pretty unhappy with what happened.
Yeah.
But I wanted to offer that other take because I'm hearing otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, the way I look at it is like, I just think Sasha and Naomi probably should just went through with it. I mean, I understand their feelings and they don't, you know, coming out of it, how they feel. And I get that this is the 80s, the 90s, where it could affect their, you know, drawing power in other areas. But no matter what happens, if Sasha's contract runs out and she wants to continue to wrestle and she goes to AEW, she's going to be a big star there.
Mm-hmm.
Naomi, you know, her contract is coming up soon, I guess. Apparently, I saw that. They were part of renegotiations. You know, if her contract doesn't get renewed and she went to AEW, she'd be a star there probably for a little while and then part of the girls. Sasha would be a feature player, right? So I don't think their booking of would really, at the end of the day, really affect any future business for them. So I would just do it and get out. If you're not happy, just finish out your contract and get out. That's, you know, that's what I would do. That, well, if they sit home, could they freeze their contract? They sit home.
Yeah, I think so.
See, that's not gonna, I mean, if you're not happy and it sucks, but you signed the deal, like, just if you have a couple years or less, finish up. If Naomi has 6 more months, just finish up, right? Like, I think Sasha personally, even if she does this program, was she supposed to be with Ronda or with Bianca? Probably Ronda, right?
I think Ronda.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I think Ronda was who she was supposed to be with.
I still think, like, because the roster is, the changeover is not there. Yeah, they have younger girls coming up, but they're younger and experienced girls, right? So they're always going to go back. It's just like they've been doing for years now. They always got the same people on the men's side, and it's going to be looked at on the women's side. The Charlottes, the Beckys, you know, Sasha. So I think Sasha at the end of the day will be back where she is. Naomi, I get it. Naomi, I like Naomi. I think she's a hell of an athlete, but also think she's in the middle, right? Mm-hmm. She just, because she doesn't have that special quality that a Charlotte has, a Rhea Ripley has. She's not the worker of those level, or Sasha Banks. Sasha Banks is really good. So I think Sasha would be fine. Naomi, I'm not sure. There's what I'm hearing and the scuttlebutt I'm hearing is that Naomi will probably get things cleared up and be back. And Sasha, you know, a lot of people think she doesn't want to wrestle anymore. She wants to do acting. So mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll see. But that's my take. I say just get it over with and do it. And I think it's much better what they're doing now. I mean, that's why I wanted to know, like, who are they feuding with? Are they in some major program?
Well, I think that's the other part of it is that what they were supposed to do mm-hmm. has already like kind of been put aside.
Because there's a women's roster, I think, to for a women's title, right? But I don't know about tag titles. I think women's tag team titles are a waste of time, personally. Because it just takes contenders away from the title. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of all these belts, you know, in WWE and AEW. Yeah. So, yeah. But
you know what I find so interesting is Naomi is not only married to somebody who is in the single top act in the company, but by marriage, she's also related to the number one guy in the entire company.
Yeah, I can see her being put in that group.
Well, what I wonder is like, why, like you would think that they would just fix that. Like, do you want to not that she needs their help, like to get her situation resolved, but like those are people who you don't want to be frustrated as well. And everyone, I'm sure, you know, they're just going to try and be professional about it. But I know Roman had, you know, he's now got a different schedule. And these guys, the Usos, you know, in the last year or whatever, have never been hotter than they are now. And that's, you know, she's related to them. So they just need to, you know, figure that out. Like, take care of that family. That family is very meaningful to your company.
Yeah, but it's everyone. Even Roman case, I'm sure he's like, you know, he has sympathy for Naomi and Sasha. But at the same time, I think this is just normal wrestling mentality. At the end of the day, it's an individual thing. So you handle your business and stuff. So I would think that, you know, he feels a certain way, but I don't think it's his job to, you know, just go stand up for her. You know, she made that choice, right? I mean, so...
I mean, I think she'll be fine. So many wrestling conflicts have been created out of less. Like, imagine, you know, somebody who's married and then, you know, Jerry Lawler quit WWE because they, you know, because of what they were doing to the cat, right? Like, so it's just like, you know, come on, just like figure this thing out. Like,
I think they will eventually. I mean, I can also see Vince's side. I know a lot of people don't like to look at Vince's side of it. Because he's crazy, you know. But think about Sasha. It's not like she has the best reputation, you know, when it comes to, like, being, you know, always, how should I say, puts up, you know, a struggle with creative, right? So, sometimes I think you bend, as Vince will bend for certain things or give people opportunities. But when someone's always pushing back, sometimes you might just have to put a stop to it, like the, you know.
And that's why
that could have been it. That could have been it. Just been the final straw. Like, dude, again, you have an issue with something.
But that's also why I'm such a big fan of hers, because she understands that she doesn't have to just be worker bee. Like, she has showed, like, oh yeah, I was in this college football commercial. Oh, I was in The Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. My cousin is Snoop Dogg. Like, they're like that whole thing. There's value in her that, you know, if she's not just like, oh yeah, I'll do everything, and I'm sure she has done all of those things and has not seen the promises, you know, come out of that, and so you're just like, super frustrated. Like, okay, how long do I have to be worker bee until, you know, these things are going to happen? Because, I mean, if you think about it, you know, she, it really has been the Rhonda and Becky show since WrestleMania 35, right? Like, she's been out of that mix, and I don't know. I saw it at WrestleMania 32. I keep saying this. I was like, WrestleMania 32, she comes out with Snoop Dogg, and I was like, okay, I think Charlotte is winning this match. We need to change it now. Like, she needs to win this match. She just
I agree with you. She should be a featured. She should be one of the top girls. I don't even think she should have been in this tag team situation. I think she should have been one of the contenders for. Yeah. I guess not Charlotte, because that's been done to death, and they've wrestled a million times.
The Ronda program in a bubble is amazing. I would love to see them wrestle again.
No, that's what I would say for Sasha. Like, okay, like, is it one and done with Ronda? Like, am I just whatever that. Was it Money in the Bank's coming up next, right? Like, is it just that show? Is it going to lead to July? Is it going to lead to SummerSlam and our third match or something? Like, you know, if that's the case, you know, I could see her, you know, trying to figure that out. Maybe that's what she was trying to do. And it's like, no, we're just going to get one and done. But I don't think Sasha is a one and done contender. Naomi, I could see that. Naomi, I could see a fun athletic match with Bianca Belair, right? And Bianca Belair retain. I don't think it's a feud, but I mean, you could branch it out. You can have Sasha so focused on getting the title from Ronda, where the tag titles are neglected, and I mean, there's an issue with Naomi and Sasha because of that, and you know, Sasha's more focused on the title, and maybe Naomi's having an issue with it. They could break up. They can feud on their, you know, they can feud each other or something like that. You know what I mean? I don't know. You could do a lot of stuff with it. Just get rid of those damn tag titles. Get rid of those damn tag titles and NXT. Like, why do you even have
what about
those?
The ROH Tag Team Championship that Roppongi Vice wants a piece of?
Yeah, we'll get on that. Good transition.
All right, let's talk about some Dynamite. No, I wanted to do that because I thought we you and I could have a pretty balanced discussion about that. And with your, you know, with your experience on the other side and having to deal with folks who may not, you know, enjoy what you've put on paper there.
Yeah.
All right. AEW Dynamite from Wednesday night. This was the night of the burial of the Jokers. I don't want to see the Jokers ever again.
Wild card Wednesday, never to be seen again.
So the first match was Samoa Joe against Johnny Elite. Now, from what I understand, this tricked a lot of people because they thought it was going to be Gargano.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a little disappointed, but I wasn't necessarily disappointed because I think John Morrison fits, you know, what AEW likes to do very well. He's all, you know, he can also do the WWE style. Like he learned that. But I wasn't mad at this. I was like, oh yeah, John Morrison. I kind of like him. Now, when it came to the match, I thought he tried to do way too much in his small amount of time that he had to get over to this fan base. But what did you think about John Morrison coming into this match as the Joker, Johnny Elite?
Don't have a problem with Morrison in AEW. Is he signed?
I have not seen the placard that says
it's only official if it's on Twitter.
Well, I looked for it. I was looking for it. I didn't see it. Doesn't mean that it hasn't happened.
I was talking to someone else and they said the same thing. I haven't seen the. I'm like, oh, this is where we're at now. This is like, I mean, when I first saw him come out, I'm like, God, they're going to have Morrison beat Samoa Joe?
Mm-hmm.
Why would they do that? Because booking, as what I've been taught, and is that, and just throughout history, like, if you debut a new act as a surprise, they should win. Or there should be a reason when they get disqualified or they don't win or counted out, like The Undertaker, right? Survivor Series 1990. He didn't win the Survivor Series match for his team, but he also didn't get pinned, right? And he also looked very strong in that match. A surprise should always win because it just ruins – it hurts them. It hurts when they lose their first match in, right? And so I'm like, why would they do that? Oh, no, then I'm like, okay, Jay Lethal's going to come out, and there's going to be some shenanigans, and that's how they're going to do it. But no, you know, Joe just beats it. I'm like, why would they do that to this guy? Unless this is a one-and-done thing, a little special surprise, then I guess. But at the same time, for the future business, when you do Owen Hart tournament again and you have a Joker, people are like, well, who cares? After last year, both Jokers lost, right?
Yeah.
As far as the match itself, I thought it was not a good match. That was a very it was a styles clash big time here. John Morrison looked lost a few times. They're both on a different page at one point. The dive out, I'm sure everyone's seen it by now. I saw it right away. Is when John Morrison or Johnny Elite, I should call him Johnny Elite, I guess, climbs the top rope and he's on live television motioning to Samoa Joe where he needs to be so he can catch him for the dive out. I could not believe it. And it's not just once, but twice, right? And he does that. And then he does this kind of like that move that Sammy Guevara did off the top of the ladder where he went straight down on his head. He does the same thing and misses. So after telling Joe where to go, he still misses. But here's the thing. I don't blame Joe for trying to not really catch him there. Because when a guy comes and does flips like that, his legs are going everywhere, it's damn near impossible to safely catch someone like that. There's a better chance of you getting hit in the eye, break an orbital bone, broken nose, a concussion, with the legs going so fast, flipping around and at you. Yes, Joe took it right. Turn your shoulder and just deflect because – and so that was bad. And then at one point – did you see that point where, like, Joe had him up for the muscle buster and they literally were going over spots right there. Like, he's holding him. And then John reverses it and they get a couple more spots. And then the 450 was short.
Yep.
Which I knew. I'm like, I think he's too far out. And then he sure shit. Like, he hit his legs first. It looked really bad. Yep. And his strikes looked pathetic. And I like John Morrison. You know, we booked him, Marcus and I booked him APW, God, what, 4 or 5 times, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And true pro, like, great guy, just no headache, just a cool freaking dude, down for whatever, gave 100%. So I really like him. So it hurts me to kind of just, you know, talk negative about the match, but I have to say, it was a bad match. And on top of that, the booking was really bad here. Because there's so many people on this roster, AEW. They can't even fit them all on these two shows they have, right? You can't put someone in these tournaments that could use the exposure, you know, that instead of like these surprises, like Tony Khan does so many surprises that they're getting less and less, right? So the next time it's going to be like the boy who cries wolf. Like, so the next time he does it, people are like, ah, who cares? It's not going to be anyone. But, you know, last time it was just John Morrison and Maki Ito, right? Last time it was the Ring of Honor announcement. It was like, you could just said that online, right? Like, and I just think he needs to kind of cut back on these surprises, right? And just, you know, give spots to a woman and a man that's been on the roster that does she get an opportunity. Like, what's Christian doing? Why couldn't Christian be in this match and just have a good match with Samoa Joe and lose here, right? Instead of just being the booker of the AEW now. Like, why not? I just say that because he booked 2 matches on this show. So, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'm just throwing Christian out there. Where the hell's Brian Cage at? He showed up in Ring of Honor pay-per-view, had a bad match. And
ROH, they're waiting for him. They're waiting to figure it out. What happened to Brian Cage?
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, not like I really want to see Brian Cage on my television, but, you know, like, there's people they could have used, right? Lance Archer versus Mojo, right? Just have a match, Joe wins. So I don't know.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with you. I thought the Joker was a little bit wasted here. You know, the funny thing is about what you were saying about all these dives out and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The most effective one is Tanahashi's, and it's just the high fly flow, right? It's not about how far he jumps or how high he jumps. It's the timing of mm-hmm. what he's doing.
It's match placement where he puts it in. He just, yeah. just do it to do it.
And it means so much more than mm-hmm. anything crazy that these guys do. So, you know, that's what I like when it comes to that kind of stuff. Though, you know, there's some things that Will Ospreay does and you're like, oh my God, like that dude is ridiculously athletic, and that stuff could work too. But yeah, just give me a high fly flow and I'm good.
Well, attack. Darby, when he does his dive outs, like when he barrels into dudes, right? Like I don't want to catch that dude, but
no, me neither.
But like at least he looks like he's attacking you, yeah. right? And I just couldn't believe what was going on. I'm like, did he just really tell the guy to get positioned to dive on him? And that really frustrated me because I went to an indie show this past weekend and other than two matches that had four professionals in it, the rest was a bunch of goofballs. And it just really, I really was soured on pro wrestling this week. And I'm honestly, AEW did not help out this week for me. So,
so then Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, and Satnam Singh attack Samoa Joe, which brings out Rocky Romero and the best friend goofballs. Now, what I wrote in my notes, I was like, keep those guys away from Samoa Joe. Mm-hmm. He does not need to be involved with those guys. But then later in the show, you had Trent and Rocky Romero together as Roppongi Vice. What happened to Chuck E. T?
Good.
I know. I
hit the trap door.
Okay, for my taste, I 100% agree with you. But we just saw the guy.
If I'm Tony Khan, I'm like Jabba the Hutt, the Rancor. Just Tuck, come here.
Maybe maybe Chuck E. T and Orange are like a team or something.
I don't know if Chuck E. T is going to be around that much longer. I wouldn't doubt if he's one of those guys that just quietly gets his contract run out and it's back to the indies for him, because just look what happened in this match alone. What happened after the post-match. When Rocky and Trent run in with their chairs and Chuck had a chair too. But look, go back. I want everyone to go back and look. And the way Chuck is running out, he's just not even running. He's jogging. He doesn't look like he's about to go into a fight. He's just, there's no anticipation for action. He just knows there's not going to be any physical confrontation. So he's just doing his part. He's half-assing it is what he's doing. And instead of putting an effort into making like, oh shit, something's going to happen. They're going to come make a save. There's going to be a fight here. But then the heels powder, right? But he just kind of just strolls in there. I was livid when I saw that, right? I would be so pissed off Tony Khan when he got to the back. Like, dude, what are you doing half-assing out there? Like, why didn't he put you out there? Next time, I'm not going to put you out there, right? Like, So in my opinion, good. I'm glad it was, hey, we're reuniting Roppongi. And I can see why. You know, yeah, I'd rather have Rocky Romero than Chuck Taylor. So
segment in the back. Jeff Hardy is cleared after his crazy match last week. Him and Matt are talking. And, of course, somebody walks in. It is the Young Bucks. They want him to take the night off because he's beat up. Because otherwise, Adam Cole's going to kick his ass. And then they go back and forth. And, you know, Matt's like, hey, you Hardy cosplays. If you interfere, we're beating you up. So...
Yeah, I'm sorry, you got more on this? I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, like, I watched this, and I'm like, again, someone just says two
that's
words.
That's the gimmick, man. That's the gimmick.
It's like almost like it's a running joke with them. It's like, who killed Kenny in South Park, right? Like, but this is at least that was a funny gag. This is a stupid because it's just so obvious that the Hardys are standing out just outside frame. And I went back and I timed it 0.4 seconds. And they are like, they have to come into the room. Like Jeff Hardy does not see them. Are they teleporting? Like, what are they doing? Right. Like, and then Matt Hardy's like threat to them was not convincing at all. It was so, so showbiz and over the top. It's almost like just fake. Honestly, I hate using that word, but it's just what it was. And it's not no interest in this match at all. You know, I think I would have been in like a couple years ago, or maybe I still think they should have just done it right away. Like, because I think the Hardy Boys nostalgia act has ran out within like a couple weeks, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. When you said this, what was it, like 3 weeks ago when we talked about this?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, they're kind of teasing it. They haven't really said it yet. Let's give them time. And then last week, I thought it was, I didn't think the fans reacted very well. And then this week, it did look a little bit like not. Like, I feel like the Hardys, their name may still mean something, but the more and more and more that they're just in matches, like, I wouldn't have put Jeff in this tournament.
No.
Like, they're just in matches. And it's like, okay, now I know what to expect out of these matches, which they're not great. So now this Young Bucks and Hardys match, I'm going to be waiting for it. I think if they would have set it up a little bit differently and they would have really pulled back on Jeff and just been setting up this feud, I think it would have been a lot better. But, you know, we've seen all the hits now, you know? This was going to be a match with some of the greatest hits, and now we've seen them all.
Yeah, like, you hold back on debuting Jeff Hardy until get close to Double or Nothing. Then you shoot angle the Bucks. Jeff Hardy has not wrestled yet. The fans have not seen the Hardys wrestle yet as a team. The first match as a team versus the Bucks is at Double Nothing. It feels like a special match, right? Hardy Boys, you could either put the Hardy Boys over or whatever. I would probably just put the Hardy Boys over because the Bucks don't need it really, right? I guess that they should show. You know. I don't know. They can go either way. I don't care either way. Maybe they come back with the Hardy Boys, could then, you know, maybe get a couple of wins on TV, and then they face FTR, but put over FTR. And then you can kind of split off Jeff into singles matches. I don't know about Matt. I don't think Matt's really up to doing singles matches anymore. But like, Jeff could do some, and you use the some that he can do to put over people. Like Darby, right? Not the way they did it with that stupid-ass hardcore match. Like, have a match first, then maybe do a match like that down the line, but have them put over a couple people, have them beat a couple people in the lower mid card, lower mid heels, and then the upper stars, you have them kind of put over. So that's what I would do.
All right, so CM Punk comes out for this Hangman and Takeshita match. He's got a very classy T-shirt, I would say. The politics that people are seeing these days. So
loved it.
JR and CM Punk and Tony and Excalibur are your broadcast team for this match. I really love this match. I am so enamored with Takeshita. I watch this guy and I'm like, man, I was rooting for him to win every single match. I was like rooting for him to beat Hangman. I was like, I don't care. I don't care about Double or Nothing. I just want to see this guy win the match.
Uh-huh.
He was so good. I don't know. It's one of the better matches I think we've seen of late. Hangman hits the Buckshot Lariat, which Punk calls the Punk Shot. And then he hits the GTS to win. There were some near falls for Takeshita. There was an interesting thing where JR and Punk both called Hangman a pouter, like someone who pouts. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, they were like, the JR was like trying to get him to like follow up on something, like, you know, don't just wait, you know, to go pin this man or whatever. And he was like, they both like said he was a pouter or he was pouting or something. That was so weird. But yeah, I really liked the match. Punk made it. I think he was trying to explain maybe what wasn't explained last week in that the reason why he had the match with Silver is because he wants to be at his A game and he wants to be ready for this title match. And that's why Hangman was having this title match. But, you know, for Takeshita's sake, we've now seen him lose two times. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think he's like my new favorite wrestler.
It's funny. Today on Twitter, I saw a lot of people like, wow, this Takeshita. Well, this guy's great. Oh, man, what a match. Takeshita's great. And I'm like, yes, you take this match, you put it anywhere else. So it was a good match, and he had a great performance. But 2 weeks before the pay-per-view, this is not the match I would do for Hangman and Page, right? Page probably should have... See, Page, he does this heel promo, right? Or whatever you want to call it. I call it a heel promo. And he wrestles the same match he always wrestles. No aggressiveness, nothing. Just the same match he's going to have with everyone. He should have beat a babyface. He should have been more aggressive, and he should have been dominant. And of course, should have finished him off with the go to sleep, right? That's what this should have been. With someone else, not Takeshita. Like you said, he's already lost on Rampage to Jay Lethal. He lost here to Hangman on Page. This is how they should have brought this kid in. One thing, like if you don't know who this is, he's one of the top guys in DT, and he's really good. And he's wrestled like what they said is true. He wrestled Okada, Tenryu, like they put him in these big matches. Akiyama beat him, I believe, and he's one of their bigger stars. So what you do is when you give this guy a vignette, show highlights, not his – he's done some wackiness with DT, because DT does some really wacky stuff.
Does it have anything to do with, like, hiking up the trunks and showing bare ass and all that
stuff?
I'm
sure he might have done that.
Oh,
too,
man.
I'm sure he's been – or he's been in all those what's it called, beer garden matches where they're out in some kind of a beer garden doing – moonsaults off of tables, like picnic tables. But anyways, like, okay, don't show that crap, right? Show all of the highlights of his matches where he's looking good against Okada, Akiyama. I don't know about the Tenryu match, because Tenryu was really old back then. But, you know, or just with Endo, like, just show him be athletic and exciting and be like, this guy's coming to AEW. Show, like, 2 to 3 weeks of that vignette. And then you do 2 or 3 more weeks of him winning matches, and people are like, this guy's going to be a contender. And then maybe he doesn't wrestle for the AEW title, but maybe he could be a great challenger for the TNT title, right? Maybe he wins it, and you give something to DT, right? Like, as something. Like, do something with him. This does nothing for him. Like, people liked his performance, but this didn't do nothing really for him because he still lost at the end of it. And this did nothing for Hangman Page because he's going, you know, 2 segments with a guy that the fans aren't even established to here, right? So that's my issue with it. The match, I had no problem with it. It was on a different show at a different time, you know, but not 2 weeks before building to the biggest match. Well, I guess, I don't know. I think Wardlow and MJF might be the biggest match in Double or Nothing at this point. But still, if Hangman on the Page and Punk is right there, right? Maybe 1.5. It's those are 2 matches I want to see.
I thought Punk's announcing did a lot of good for their feud. You know, we've talked about it, right? Punk is overshadowing Hangman in this mm-hmm. feud, but he was really putting Hangman over in the commentary. So I thought that worked.
And so is Hangman next week explodes and they finally have a physical confrontation?
Yeah, I guess.
It has to be, right? A pull apart of some sort. But I just, because right now, Paige does not look, he's a, doesn't look like, kind of looks like a powder. I don't know.
Well, that maybe that's why they said that.
Maybe that's why they're saying that. Yeah.
All right. So your favorite, Fuego del Sol.
Oh.
He's going to team with the Dark Order against House of Black on Rampage.
Why was this on the show?
Because it was like 15 seconds.
That's 15 seconds we could use somewhere else.
Well, I think there's a few people to blame here for the length of the show. One of them is probably Tony Khan for booking so many things on the show.
That's the thing, too. Okay, so they're running on the card. I'm like, how many? They're going to throw all this on a 2-hour show, and they like to give matches times, right? So I wasn't surprised by the end.
Yeah. All right, so we got Swerve and Keith Lee versus JD Drake and Anthony Henry. They have a cool finish. It's the power bomb with Swerve hitting a senton, a seated senton on
double
top
stomp.
Of what was it? A double stomp? I thought it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I thought he did the senton, but okay, that makes sense.
If we did the Fabrice Rougeau thing, yeah. Crotch to the face.
Exactly.
I love that.
So then they do an interview after, and Keith says that they are now. He didn't. I wish he would have said, and I don't know what the ratings are. I don't know where they are in the rankings, but he said they're a top 5 team.
Why didn't
he just say like we're like number 2 or something?
They must be 5.
They must be 5 then, right? I don't know. Why even mention the rankings if you're not like the top contender or like the second contender? That's silly.
Do you remember them on a tag match other than... Have they been on tag? I missed a couple Rampages, so they could have been.
They may have been on Rampage. I don't really remember.
Okay.
So Hobbs and Starks come out. Swerve tells Starks that he looks like a bar of soap with a pearl necklace. Pop the crowd. Hobbs is looking pretty good, man. That dude stands out.
Huh. Everyone's getting their pay-per-view shape going.
Oh yeah. He came out with the overalls like how we used to wear the overalls in like the 90s.
I never wore overalls, man.
No?
My wife did.
Yeah?
Yeah, I see a lot of pictures in her high school. She has the overalls on. She loved overalls.
The only thing that would have made it better is if he pulled up the right pant leg like he
pegged
was LL Cool J. Just like pulled it up like to his knee like he was LL.
Oh, it's not pegging? Remember pegging leg?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Now you're going back to like the Z Cavaricci days.
That's my time, man. That's my glory. But go glory days, dog. I was confused. Wait, pegging the legs? I thought those pegs on the bike. Like I was just...
Yeah, and that means something completely different today. Yeah. So, all right.
Got that. You're dirty.
All right. So then they come out and they're like, you know, you can't be stepping in front of us. And then Christian and the Jurassic Express come out. So Christian is calling all the shots.
He's the booker.
He makes it a 3-way. I needed Jungle Boy to really, really like give me a great Luke Perry face here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he tried, but I don't think he did a great job because I think his reaction was supposed to be like, huh? Like, you didn't tell us that this is going to be a 3-way, right?
Describe what a Luke Perry face should be that he should.
Okay, like, so
Luke Perry. I know it's hard to try to verbally describe.
And this is not disrespectful in any way, because Luke Perry, one of my favorite people of all time, rest in peace. You know, when he's getting yelled at by Big Jim Walsh, you know, because he and Brenda went to Baja and Brenda, you know, snuck out and then she got caught at the border because she didn't have her ID. And then, you know,
I watched Dial 2-1-0. I've never seen like maybe more than 3 episodes, but since you always talk about it, I kind of feel like I watched all 25 seasons of it.
But he has this like really great, like Luke Perry, fantastic facials. Like he doesn't have to say anything, but he's got the facials perfect. Now I wanted Jungle Boy to like give a look that was like, WTF, Christian, like you didn't say anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Christian says, oh, and you know, we're going to get our revenge and we're going to have this match on Dynamite next week. Jungle Boy is going to have this match. And I wanted him to do it again, like, WTF, dude, what are you doing? And he tried, but he didn't sell it. He needed to sell it a little bit more because I don't even think people realized that he didn't want those things to happen or that he did not know that those things were going to happen. I think because they're the babyface tag team. Why would they make it a 3-way? That makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, I guess if you're like this, if you have like this rivalry with both of these teams, then you're like, okay, we can beat both of these guys. But there's no rivalry at all. So why don't you just face the top contender and then face the next contender after that? So Christian puts them in this match, and rightfully so, they should be like, you know, what the hell's going on here? But Jungle Boy didn't sell it hard enough for me.
Yeah, what he did give you, first of all, Christian made at Double or Nothing a three-way for attack titles, but yes. He wants Jungle Boy to get his win back.
Yes.
So next week, they're going to have a little bit of a preview with Jungle Boy versus Ricky Starks versus Swerve, right?
Yeah.
Which is smart. You want to take Keith Lee out of this situation. But Jungle Boy's somewhat, this is where you need someone to really work, get everyone direction, not just Christian, what he's going to say. Like, they need to give directions to Dina. Oh, what's the name of? Like, what's the name? Luchasaurus.
Yeah.
Dinosaur. Just stand there. You're still here. We're paying you. We're just waiting for your contract to end. But just look mean. Jungle Boy.
That dude is getting re-signed. I don't know what you're talking about. They love that guy. I don't love that guy, but they love that guy.
He needs to go on the pit with the Rancor as well. get rid of him as well. Jungle Boy should be like, yeah, let's go. I'm ready to fight. Like, let's do it. Like, not like this one is looking at you. He's like, what? That is the look he gave Christian when they made the three-way. What? Like, no, dude. Like, you're the baby face. You're the champ. Like, you want to get you were screwed. You're pissed off at Swerve for interfering. But okay.
So the psychology though is right. Is if it's a one-on-one, then I think that's the right thing. But Christian just made his odds against two heels.
Swerve's not a heel.
Well, but they're both. It's not like he's gonna have the advantage, right? Like, he's not gonna have any advantage. It's gonna be him against two people who want to beat him up, essentially.
But he's the babyface. He is the ultimate babyface, right? Like, and he's a champ. He's a champion. He needs to be like, yeah, I want to compete. I want to fight. That's what the reaction should have been. And now, maybe there's some shenanigans that happen in the three-way that Starks comes out on top. I really wish, and then it leads to the pay-per-view, and then things fall apart for Jurassic Express. They lose the belts, and finally, we had the blow up of Christian and Jungle Boy. Maybe I don't know. To me, it doesn't even feel like it's even been teased that well. So I even want to see it now.
Well, they're definitely going into it pretty big now, because Christian is, you know, just taking control of all these situations.
I mean, what I've really done is probably had FTR win the belts, being the situation, versus Jurassic Express win the belts. But if Tony Khan's like, no, John, I need to have, you know, Swerve and Keith Lee or Hobbs and Starks, I'll be like, okay, well, let's do this. Let's put Lee and Swerve on the Wednesday Dynamite or on the Rampage before the pay-per-view. They're not going to be on the pay-per-view, but they're going to get a big win over one of our top five tag teams. So they will face the winners of the tag team titles. That'll be the new program going forward, whoever wins that tag titles. And the winner of the tag titles would be Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs, because these guys are stars, future stars. I love Ricky Starks. You know, I love Powerhouse Hobbs, of course. I'm not just being biased because of my history with him. I'm just saying, like, he's been doing such a great job in AEW, right? Mm-hmm. And Starks, like I said, is a star. Like, they need to be on TV more. And more without this. I'm glad they're on TV now, but they need to be more. And I think them as tag team champions, if it can't be FTR at this point in time, like, I like the idea of Ricky Starks and Hobbs getting a run with it. And I like that program with Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland, not Swerve Scott, I call him Swerve Scott, really. Swerve Strickland. And I like that program.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, but honestly, at the end of the day, I would like to see Starks and Hobbs coming out of that one. And continue on like a good 6 months run as a champ, and then may they lose it to FTR. You know.
All right. Next was a Chris Statlander and Red Velvet, little interview segment, and it was more just Jade coming in and making fun of everybody, and Tony Schiavone included. They're gonna face each other on Friday. And MJF and Wardlow, the 10 lashes segment. The heat in this thing was off the radar.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I almost, like, it's so, okay. So if you watch WWE TV, the crowd doesn't treat segments like this. Now, you go to WrestleMania, and you got Stone Cold Steve Austin hitting stunners on people after being out of the ring for X number of years. Then, yeah, you're going to hear that kind of heat. But this heat for a TV show was pretty rare to me. Like, you know, the AEW crowd is normally pretty darn good. But for this segment, I was like, geez.
This is truly the hottest program in the company, right? I mean, there's no doubt about it.
In wrestling, I think.
In wrestling, of course. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love this. And I don't know what you thought about the segment personally, but I thought it was really good. Again, the only thing I would do differently, like when the beatdown and all that stuff happened, that's when you started. Like I said, I was kind of playing about this, but they need the officials, they need the referees, and, you know, they need to make it more chaotic at the end. You know, they can't just sit there and keep beating on the guy who's handcuffed and no one's out there trying to do anything to stop it. I'm not saying send you know, your top wrestlers, but send Jerry Lynn into the group, you know, and the referees to kind of try to stop him.
All right, so you know, he's getting whipped with the belt. He's no selling it. He's smiling. He's laughing. And MJF is getting so mad. He whips him a couple times. He's like, what the hell? Takes off his shirt. Gets so mad he wastes like 3 shots in a row. Sean Spears has to tell him to stop. Sean Spears finally got him to wince. I think it was number 9. And he got him right on the traps, man. Like, That one didn't look fun to take. And then you look at his back, and these were legitimate belt shots. So then MJF's got one more, and he's like loading up on this thing, and he's like, oh, I'm gonna get this guy, and instead he just kicks him right in the nuts. Wardlow goes down to 2 knees, and MJF starts lashing him with shot after shot after shot after shot. Spears picks him up. MJF puts the ring on, pops him with the ring. Spears hits a finisher on him, and then MJF, who is the referee in their cage match, does the 3 count. Now, my question to you, should Wardlow have been, the visual pin? Should he have been pinned by all of these things?
Yeah. I'm fine with that, because last week it was Wardlow that had, you know, the last laugh, I guess, on MJF. This time it was MJF. Next week it will be Wardlow back on top. There might be something else. There might be kind of Wardlow with the win, but then something's going to happen, I'm sure, with Wardlow going in. I still think he might be a little injured going into that match somehow. Mm-hmm. But, my only issue was, like I said, I just... The beatdown went too long for no one to come out. And that was my only issue.
And then we had the next segment, which was Roppongi Vice, which we'd already talked about. They want FTR. They want the ROH tag team titles. Kyle O'Reilly versus Rey Fénix. Now, you said that Johnny Elite and Samoa Joe, what was a Styles clash. This one was interesting because Rey Fénix, the luchador, had to do a lot of selling in this match.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes he forgot. Sometimes he forgot what side he was supposed to sell. Mm-hmm. And then he had to quickly revert. He was selling his left arm. Then he put a headlock on with the left arm. And I think he realized mid-headlock, like, oh, that's the wrong arm. And he switched it to the right arm. He was also selling a leg, which sometimes he was selling it like he couldn't walk, and then at other points he wasn't selling it at all. So just that piece of the match, to me, I was just focusing on it way too much, and it kind of took me out of it a little bit. There were also great moves. There were cool transitions. I give Kyle O'Reilly a lot of credit for really keeping, you know, because there's a lot of stuff that Rey Fénix does, and they still Kyle still kept the match together, I thought. Mm-hmm. At the end, Kyle locks in an armbar, and Phoenix has to quickly tap out. I give credit to Phoenix for tapping out immediately, because I think if he didn't tap out immediately, it would have been ridiculous. But overall, I could see a lot of people really liking this match. The weird selling of the two injuries kind of took me out of it.
Yeah. I mean, overall, I did like it. I liked the first part of it because I thought their styles mixed well. I thought Kyle really featured his flying, you know, Kyle featured Phoenix's flying, you know, and featured his style. I thought they had a good blend going. And yes, the styling was kind of inconsistent for Phoenix. I think the issue is the end of the match for me, what really took me out of it was, remember when Phoenix hit that Hurricanrana on the floor and Kyle took that big bump?
Yeah.
And like within seconds, Kyle's back up and hits the armbar and wins, right? And I'm guessing maybe there might have been like a time issue there.
There's another match where they did that. Like,
I'm guessing
even worse, I think.
Yeah, I'm guessing this is one of the reasons why they're trying to make some time and you know, it just looked bad there. But overall, it was better than I was expecting. Happy to see Kyle win.
Yeah.
Kyle Samoa Joe should be a lot of fun. Samoa Joe's going to be injured going into that match. That's going to be part of the story, the arm, the pipe to the arm by Jay Lethal. So I'm guessing it's going to be Joe and Cole, right?
Yep. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, that's what it looks like to me. I can't imagine they're doing Kyle and is
Kyle and Cole. We just saw that for like a whole year.
No, I know, but like I know, but Kyle, but Kyle's not like ready for that yet. Here,
yeah,
that position. So,
yeah. So then we had the giant segment with Danielson, William Regal, Moxley, Santana and Ortiz, and Eddie Kingston all come down, and they're in the ring, and the Jericho Appreciation Society comes out. They want the music stopped, and they want all the pyro and all that nonsense stopped. So Jericho runs down everyone, and he goes for the jugular on some of these guys. Mm-hmm. He's talking about William Regal being an addict, almost dying. He uses Danielson's clean-cut persona, his nerd persona, to get digs at Moxley for being in rehab. He also reminds us that one time he peed in Regal's tea on WWE TV. I think that was in the build-up to WrestleMania 17, maybe?
Oh, I didn't know that even happened on television. That was something that happened in the back.
No, it was a segment on television when Regal was playing the commissioner role, I think. Because I just remember him, Regal taking a sip of the tea and then doing like the super bitter face.
That's what we call an Easter egg.
so then Regal tells this long story, which ends up in saying that every time that Jericho wrestled a match that was not against him, he went into Jericho's toiletry bag, took out Jericho's toothbrush, and shoved it up his ass. And Jericho was like, I don't know if he was trying to play it as is he joking? But Daniel Garcia was very angry. He's like, how can you possibly do that? That's disgusting.
Yeah.
So Jericho's like, cut the BS. We're going to have a match. I created this match. It's called Spring Stampede. And Mox was like, no, not doing any of that shit. Instead, Mox wants a gang warfare, anything goes match at Double or Nothing. Jericho decides to play the babyfaces against them because at one point they were all sort of feuding with each other. And very recently, Eddie Kingston and Bryan Danielson were kind of going at each other's throats. And so Eddie finally gets the mic and is like, you know what? I know the pay-per-view is coming up. I know, you know, the crowd wants to see us fight, but I don't give a crap. Let's go now. And Jericho takes one step. He's like, nope, goes to the back. And Eddie's like, nope, we're going after him. And Bryan Danielson is stopping Eddie. And then Eddie's getting pissed. He's like, why are you touching me? And then they start pushing each other.
Yeah.
And that ends the segment. So we're getting a 10-man tag, it looks like. No holds barred, anything goes.
Oh, wonderful. That's never happened on their show every week. I just kept looking at the segment thinking, as Regal was talking with Jericho, they're going back and forth. I'm like, was this feud Jericho versus Kingston? Didn't Jericho burn Kingston and he's sitting on the top rope, you know, just sitting there quiet? I know he had the final word, but I don't like this. I felt like the Kingston Jericho feud didn't even end yet. Now he got all these. I feel like this is shoehorning a bunch of people on the pay-per-view. Same thing as that three-way tag team title match. Feels like a shoehorn. Yeah, so many people on the roster. He's trying to do his best to put everyone on there, and this is what happens. You're getting this stuff, and if I was Eddie, I'd be kind of pissed. I really would. I talked about this last week. Yeah, I'd be upset that now I'm in the background. The segment starts off with Jericho and Regal. That is the focus of the segment. It should be still Kingston and Jericho's issue. So, not a fan of this. Not a fan of this.
I thought it was very entertaining. I thought there were some funny lines. I thought the Regal thing was kind of out of nowhere and maybe didn't fit because he's not actually in this in mm-hmm. any way. He's not taking a punch. He's not involved. He's not fighting. So this is kind of like a little bit of a waste of time for him. But
wasn't Jericho, Regal on Jericho's podcast just letting his whole heart out?
Yeah, and that's what they referenced it as well.
Did they reference that? I didn't think.
When he said that you almost died, like that's where Regal said that he almost died was on that podcast.
That was funny because they're always like every little thing, you know, goes together, and I don't know.
The second that Mox said, "We're not doing that," I was in though. I was like, mm-hmm. "Yes, that Jericho brings up the Stadium Stampede."
I'll be reviewing Spring Stampede on the Take It Home podcast this weekend.
I think that's 1994. Why I said that. Jericho brings up the Stadium Stampede, and Mox is like, no, but Jericho is the sports entertainer. Of course he's going to bring up Stadium Stampede. And Mox is like, nope, I'm not doing that. And so, yeah, I think I like the match. There's three of my favorite wrestlers in wrestling today are going to be in this match, so I'm into it. I thought it was a way to get all 10 dudes on TV, but I also think it was probably the reason why everything after this was just so sped up is because it took so long.
Yeah, a couple seconds took too long after this. If you want to gimmick up a match like this, instead of doing the old weapons, anything goes, fight all the building, since this is the first match as a 5-on-5 or whatever. Is it 5-on-5?
Yeah.
Yeah. They should do... What if it was just like old school Survivor Series style? Elimination.
Mm-hmm.
Where the heels go over that match. And that leads to the Blood and Guts match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that's interesting.
Because how many times... We just saw last week, the tables, the ladders, and all that kind of stuff. Like, we see that almost every week. What if we just on the pay-per-view, like... save the table or something like that for something else, maybe MJF stuff, whatever,
mm-hmm.
and like just had like a regular match where the heels go over dirty and we set more rematches.
Yeah, because there's multiple guys in this match who can get pinned, so mm-hmm. whatever way they want to go, they can go that way.
Because their Blood and Guts match, if I remember correctly, the only difference what they're going to do is it's going to be confined in a cage and there's two rings, but they're also going to have weapons too.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Matt Sydal and Dante Martin want Moxley and Danielson at Rampage. Why? Not quite sure. But
why can we just nix this and show the graphic? I like Matt Sydal. I think he's a fun guy to watch. And Dante Martin's fun too. But man, these guys should not be cutting promos at all.
Next match was Britt Baker and the other Joker who turned out to be Maki Ito. This this was a match that they really did not have time for. Britt starts the match as if they had some sort of handshake agreement that Maki Ito was just going to lay down for her. Maki Ito lays down And then she cradles Britt as Britt goes for the pin.
That was fucked up.
Britt punches her right in the face, and she starts crying. Britt doesn't know what to do, and then Makito flips her right off. And this is the part where I said, you know, if you think some, you know, moves are sort of no-sold here, Makito hits her finisher, which is a sort of like falling headbutt. Britt kicks out at two, and immediately after kicking out, sets up her finisher to win the match. Didn't sell the move in any way, and I'm guessing it was because they're like, we gotta go.
Yep,
and so this is the second match of this Joker series where I was like, the Joker's dead.
Joker's dead. Stupid booking. Bad booking. So that's all you can say is I hope Owen Hart's not looking down at this, because if he is, he's not happy.
Okay, this is also the same guy. We talked about this. You were at this match where he's hitting Mick Foley with popcorn bags.
Was it on television? The only reason it was out because Dave Meltzer was there and reported on it.
How come you didn't have a newsletter back then? You could have reported on it.
No. Everyone was trying to get a newsletter back then. I was just trying to get tapes and study. And what was I doing? What year was that?
98,
right?
No, it would have been before that. It would have been 96 or 97, I think.
Yeah, at the time, I was just... No, I was there with...
It was 97. Okay.
I think, I'm pretty sure it was 97. And I was just new into the rest of the APW, so I was just wanted to learn everything at that point in time. But anyways, I just thought this was just embarrassing. I get Makito has some sort of fan base. But man, this is bad. She does not. She leave her in the Tokyo Pro, wherever the hell she comes from. Like, just leave her over there. Again, ton of women on the roster that they have that aren't on their television show they could have used here.
Toni Storm came out looking like a million trillion dollars, though, at the end of this match.
Just looking. Which looks great.
That's all she was there for. She just wanted to look really pretty on TV.
Yeah.
So Tony Schiavone's in the ring. This poor segment. This one was rough.
Yep.
Schiavone's in the ring. Serena Deeb comes out pissed off because Tony said that Thunder Rosa was going to win their match. She then calls out Dustin. She talks about them both having their own trials and tribulations, paying their dues. She talked about her own having to put breast implants in her body so that to appease old perverts.
Yeah.
I'm assuming she means Vince.
Vince, they're nice at the time, I'm guessing.
Yeah. And
Richard, maybe.
And so then I'm assuming that's why this was also on TV, was to get that line in.
Yeah.
So this she's trying to get Dustin to say the video from last week, why he picked Thunder. He couldn't say anything. He was just looking at her, wasn't able to answer. Thunder comes out. Instead of letting Thunder and Serena Deeb fight, for some reason, giant Dustin Rhodes picks up this small woman and holds her up like she's as light as a pillow. And she's trying to get out, and she throws an elbow and hits him right in the face. And then she goes to apologize. And I'm like, wait, you had to have thrown that elbow on purpose to hit this guy. So now you have remorse because you hit this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes over to check on Dustin, and boom, Serena Deeb hits her right in the face with the belt. And that is a segment. So weird stuff. Serena Deeb was trying to cut this long promo. She couldn't really hold it together. The end didn't make any sense whatsoever. And if this whole segment was to make me want to watch that match more, it did not succeed.
Nope.
I appreciated the attempt to get them on TV in some way, but this was not the right way.
And on top of that, after the belt shot, Thunder Rosa barely sold it. She's on her butt, holding her head, looking at her. Bad. Road Warrior Rosa. Like, dude, like just Just, yeah, I felt bad for Serena Deeb. She should be out there. She can't talk, and this is, you know, going long like this is. And why is Dustin just sitting there with saying nothing? He can't just say, you know what? I believe in her. I believe in Thunder. I believe she's gonna win. She's been working hard. She's a true champion. She shows heart. You know, she does it the right way. And the reason, you know, that's why I support her. You, I always have respect for you, but I don't like what you become, the shortcuts you take, you know, that kind of shit. And then that's when she slapped. But he just sat there, looked at, and is Dustin just shows up with half his face painted? He's not on shows?
It's like when, you know, the wrestlers who you always tell them, you know, just make sure you have your stuff just in case.
Yeah,
he just paints his face just in case they call him out. Okay, so main event.
But wouldn't it be a more realistic step, man, if he didn't have the face paint on?
Well, then we would get excited because then we would think that it was going back to the natural Dustin Rhodes.
Oh, didn't they hit the music? Call him the natural.
you know what I realized? He paint, like, because the paint, he has such a long face.
Uh-huh.
The paint goes halfway up his hairline. It's like, half of his face paint is all hair.
Bob Ross is like, man, this is a lot of work.
Dustin, man. All right, so main event. Hardy Boys come out together. Jeff is doing his dance, and he gets jumped by Adam Cole.
The dance that killed his debut.
This dance is going to be the death of this guy.
Yeah.
Shorter.
Back goes out there to dance. Because usually what happens, like, you hit a swanton off a turnbuckle into steps, you're fine. But you start doing a little little jig, and all of a sudden, boom, you're out for the year.
Yeah. It's a pretty short match because they didn't have a lot of time. I want to say it was like 7 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
Finish is Jeff misses the swanton, and Adam Cole hits his boom, flying knee. And that was it. It was pretty decisive. You know, there was no crying here for the babyface. And so after the match, Cole is like setting up like a super kick on Matt. And then Matt turns around and he's like, "What are you doing?" And then Jeff is like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Dude, you just lost. You have no say in this thing." And right as they do that, the Bucks come from behind. They set up for a super kick. But then they get caught trying to do this super kick. So Matt's like onto these guys, right? Like, Matt's the smart guy. He's onto these guys. But he was not onto them enough, because as he turns around to point at the Bucks, Adam Cole throws the worst double clothesline I've ever seen in my life to their back. And like, I was so sad to see them even bump for this double clothesline. But then, you know, then all kinds of chaos ensues. Sting and Darby come out, Fish and O'Reilly come out, and it becomes a Pier 6 brawl gorilla to end the match, to end the night.
Sting, they like faint, like super kick Sting.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they did the double super kicks. They took the Sting had no sold the chair to the back, but he had to bump for this double super kick.
Yeah, watch out.
Darby got the high low on the stage. And the undisputed elite were standing tall at the end of this thing.
This match, I knew they have short time unless they give extra time. They say they have extra time, but they always never go to extra time, right? Yeah.
You know what? Like, it went. My DVR said they went 1 minute over.
Oh yeah. Well, wow. Thanks TBS. Yeah. Like, So right away when Cole jumps Jeff Hardy in his entrance, I'm like, okay, cool. Just cut the shine out and just go right to the heat, build the comeback, right? Then do whatever finish they're going to do. So Cole attacks him, beats him up, and it makes sense because Jeff Hardy's really beat up from his previous match, right? Last week, ladder match, or anything else match. He throws Jeff Hardy in the ring. Jeff Hardy gets back up and he takes over. I'm like, what the? What was that point? What was the point of this? And then that super kick that he missed on the Will of the Wisp thing, like, what was up with that? Like, it's hard to time it when a guy is twisting his body like that, right?
Yes.
It would be easy. I mean, when Cole did it to Ricochet, Ricochet did a moonsault. Was able to kind of time it to where you could hit him right in the chest, but that looked really bad. I'm just glad Jeff didn't take the damn Canadian Destroyer or whatever, Tequila Sunrise, whatever it is called, because I was like, oh, man, I don't want to see him take one of those, and who knows what's going to happen. And then the chaos happened. We got what we got.
Yeah, so that's it. Now, they put so much stuff into this show. I heard of the taping for Friday, and I don't know how they're going to cut that show down to an hour.
I didn't see any spoilers.
And then next Wednesday, we're in Vegas. They got Dynamite in Vegas, the go-home show. Mm-hmm. They still have some loose ends to close, so I imagine that is also going to be a sprint, that show. And then I'll be there on Friday for Rampage. I'm not even sure when Rampage is on that day. If the Warriors, let me think about this. Rampage could be at the normal time, I think, because there's no basketball on a Friday for TNT. So I think we're good.
I'm going to order it.
You're going to order Double or Nothing?
On the regular cable, because I just can't. I'm tired of the BR live and waiting 36 hours for the replay to show up.
Yep.
Unless I get the Spanish version again. Remember that
I remember that.
Gosh.
But yeah, man, we'll be back next week. We'll talk about the go home for Dynamite, and hopefully, maybe we'll even get some sort of resolution to this Sasha situation, because I just want to see the woman wrestle again because she's fantastic. So
yeah.
All right, we'll be back next week for John. I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.